The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
I'm delighted to say Irish and Munster rugby star Emer Considine is with us here to launch the Aviva Mini Rugby Virtual Skills Hub, which will take place over next week's midterm break from Monday the 15th to Friday the 19th of February 2021. Check out aviva.ie/safe-to-dream for more. Emer, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks very much for having me on.
Before we get into you and the rugby, how's your sister getting on?
She got a bad knock at the weekend to her head. But she actually doesn't remember the bang, doesn't remember the game, doesn't remember much around what happened, but she just has a bad headache at the moment. So obviously just going to do her return to play protocol. I'm actually not sure what the AFL's protocol is with the time difference, and she's kind of been a bit sleepy and groggy. We haven't actually been chatting properly to her, so I don't think it's similar to what we have here, that she might be in with a chance of going back on at the weekend. And the fact that she still has headaches and symptoms means she probably won't be allowed to play anyway.
Yeah, which I'm sure you're glad of from this distance. It's obviously always very hard when anybody you know and love ends up getting injured, but it's obviously all that more difficult when she's so far away.
Yeah, like I think Mam was watching the game and she was down for probably 2 minutes or so, but when someone close to you is down on the ground, like Mam said, it felt like a lifetime, but it actually wasn't that long. But yeah, she's in good hands over there. Like the fact that we've met the girls, we've met the family she's staying with, I think that puts Mam's mind at ease a little bit, knowing that she's in really good care, and the Crows are a great club and they're all about family, and knowing that she hasn't got her family over there, you know, they're all buying into it and helping her through it. So at least that's one thing for us. But yeah, it's never easy when someone's on the other side of the world and gets a knock.
What actually happened, Emer, for people who didn't see the game?
So she was just on the run with the ball and someone came from behind her. And in rugby, that kind of a tackle is fine. You can just grab their legs or ankles. But what happened is in AFL, they try and wrap the ball, because if you have had an opportunity to release the ball and you get wrapped up, it's a turnover to the other team. So she actually got the ball away, but the girl never let her go. And actually, instead of falling the way she should have fallen, the Giants girl fell on top of Ailish, but Ailish's hands were tied. So she literally just face planted on the ground with her own body, but also the impact of the Giants player on top of her. So she had like double the whammy fall on top of her head, and it was straight down her head because her hands were tied. So she had no way of supporting herself. So the girl actually has got a one-match ban as a result of that.
Right. I think it's 12 days is the minimum protocol anyway, so she probably would have been missing next weekend. Fingers crossed the symptoms dissipate pretty quickly and she gets back fairly soon. Other than that, we've been talking to a bunch of the players who've gone out to play in the AFL, and they're all having the crack. It's been, I'd say, quite jealous-inducing for most people watching them have that normal lifestyle where they're out, no masks, and largely partying and having the crack.
Yeah, plus the weather, between the weather and all the fun they're having, it's really hard to wake up in the morning time and look at their Instagrams. But I think that was the one thing that Ailish found really difficult when she went over, because they're essentially treated like slaves. They were shipped from they're on a plane and then they're brought straight from the airport in with army guys in a bus, and they're very, very strict about it, and then they're shoved into the hotel rooms and not allowed outside for 14 days. So to go from that to walking outside the door and nobody wearing masks, nobody social distancing, no restrictions, crowds at games, it's bizarre. And she found it really hard to adjust at the start because she'd been here obviously through all the lockdowns. It didn't happen overnight. She still was a bit wary about, will I wear my mask? Will I bring my mask? Or, I suppose it does. We've adjusted to it here, but it was strange for her at the start.
You played Gaelic games as a kid as well.
Yeah.
The crossover of ball skills and all that kind of stuff, did it help you as a rugby player? Did we just take that for granted, or was it actually something real that you experienced when you got serious about rugby?
No, I think the same as the AFL girls, the athleticism of Gaelic footballers is what stands out from the crowd with us. And I think the ability to be able to pick up a sport, we'll be able to try our hand at probably a lot of sports, but just to get good at them, I suppose, is the hard thing. And similar to what Ailish said, it wasn't the physical side of things that was difficult. And the same for me, it wasn't the physical side of the running and the catch pass. And the skills came easy to me, but it was the game understanding that was just so hard, because they're completely different games. And even going from sevens to 15s, you know, they're completely different games as well. But I found the hardest challenge was the actual, wasn't the tackling, wasn't the passing, wasn't, you know, the rucking, because we were able to do them in isolation. And, you know, you're doing a drill, right? The aim of this drill is to pass. Great, easy. Put that into a game and your decision making. It's the learning how to pass under pressure, or learning when to pass and what's the right time, and should I have passed or should I have carried? And it was the game understanding that I completely lacked in. I didn't understand, and obviously, like, it's still a work in progress, but that was the hardest thing. And Ayla said the same thing when she got there, that things that she thinks, like, in Gaelic football, she'd automatically think to cross the ball, you know, switch the play. In the AFL, they want you kicking it down the channel on top of the people that are there, and to Ayla, that's bizarre. She's kicking the ball away. It's a 50-50 ball, but in the AFL they want her doing that because I suppose it's less risky. So she's had to change her mindset as well, and, you know, bring the skills she has had from football, transfer them over, but also play a whole new ball game essentially, because the tactical side of things is completely different. Her first week training, I think the head guy of the Crows, Phil Harper, said to her, you know, how did you find all that running? So obviously it was pre-season, and she said, you know what, it was the first time that I didn't have to think. Whereas the rest of the training session, your brain is just fried from trying to think of what's this drill, what's the aim of it, you know, the skills here, where should I be, am I in the right position? Whereas when she just ran, you don't have to think about it. So she said the easiest part of this was actually doing all the conditioning, which you never would, I don't think anyone would actually usually say.
All that running is suddenly a release. Go on.
But I was just going to ask you, from your perspective, how did you manage to build up that game smarts? Is it just from practice? Is there a coach who can actually teach you very specific things? Can you watch tape? What worked for you personally?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think, you know, you can see things in the game and you can see it happen in front of you, but until someone actually points it out and says, look, he did this or she did this, and this is why this happened, or that's why that break was made, or did you see the line that she ran there, and as a result of that, that's what happened. Or I think you need to watch the footage, but you also need someone there to coach you and be in your ear and tell you, you know, what's a better decision here, or look at a scenario and say, look, okay, what options does the player have here, A, B, and C? And I think that's the only way you're going to learn, is by watching. Yes, playing helps, but you have to analyze footage and analyze other players and pick players out that are in your position and see what they do well. And that was key with me, was looking at players and seeing what they did well. And, you know, I found at the very start of rugby, I wasn't sure how to get off my wing. Like, I found that, like, yeah, when I hang on my wing, I get the ball, but then I wasn't getting a lot of ball and I could go a game without touching a ball. So I watched clips of Keith Earls getting off his wing and popping up inside 10 and outside of 10 and in the back door and trying to figure out what he does, because he gets on the ball quite a lot for a winger off his wing. So like little things like that, and that's what I'd be encouraging other people to do if they are, you know, looking to improve their games.
What specifically was Keith Earls doing that impressed you?
It was just his work rate. It was, you know, a lot of wingers will just stay on their wings and wait for everyone else to get the ball. But that gets boring, gets frustrating sometimes when the ball isn't coming out, depending on who you're playing against or what kind of defensive line speed a team has. Like, you know, wingers mightn't get the ball. So it was just getting off, you know, popping up after third, fourth phase when, you know, 10, 20, 30 might be a bit, you know, scattered, or they mightn't have a proper defensive line set, and spotting those little gaps, and or, you know, even like a grubber in behind and chatting to the 10 or whoever is kicking the ball. It's just working off the ball to try and get your hands on the ball. And that was something that I, or even popping up a first receiver, like he pops up a first receiver quite a bit and gets in there. So those kind of things.
As you start to implement those into your game and you start to get your hands on the ball a bit more, when do you reach a point of comfort? You said it's still a work in progress, obviously, and like, I guess all good sports careers until the day you finish are always a work in progress. But when do you start to feel comfortable and like, yeah, okay, I should be here and I'm doing the right things?
Yeah, like, I don't think you ever feel content as a player either. You're always pushing for more, like you said. Like, you never, there's always something new, or the game is always developed in a different way, or you know, like even, I don't know, like the last day, James Lowe was used as a kicker, like kicking option as a winger. Like, so it's a completely different role for a winger. So the roles are always evolving, you know, in the game, and every day it's changing. But I don't know. I don't even know if I'm there yet or, but I suppose just...
Maybe a better question is, when do you start to enjoy it?
Yeah. I suppose I definitely, my first season, I was definitely learning. And that second season when I came back, and you just have to stand up. And then I think when you start doing things right, you start getting the backing of your teammates. And when your teammates back you, when your teammates are telling you to do this, and your teammates are telling you to, you know, take the ball on or get in that position, or the head coach is saying, you know, you'd get yourself into those positions. You know, I think it gives you confidence too, that they back you, and that, you know, you have the backing of your teammates, which, you know, always gives you a bit of confidence and spurs you on to do it again and again. And I think that's probably the most important thing, is that you have the backing of those key people on the team.
What are you looking for then, if you take that conversation and you apply, say, to last Sunday, when you're watching Keith Earls and you're watching James Lowe, when it comes to your analysis, what did they do well? What did they do not so well, for example, against Wales?
I think the one thing with Earlsy is you can always back his defence. I thought he had a quiet game, actually. You know, there wasn't many gaps for wingers, but, you know, these days it's not about line breaks, really. Obviously, Robbie Henshaw was the exception there, but, you know, the game, the defensive system is so good in games these days, or in teams these days, that it's about getting any bit of a game line, any bit of an advantage to put the defensive line on the back foot. So I suppose, like, look, he carries well, he's always going to be safe, but he didn't get the opportunities to, you know, make the breaks that he usually does. But his defensive system you'll never see someone make a break down his wing. You'll never see someone score a try down his wing. He mightn't always make the tackles, but he's in the right place at the right time, and he can read the defence well, whether he needs to shoot on a player man and ball, or whether he needs to wait for his inside support line. So I thought he had a quiet game. James Lowe, like I said, he's a great option. His left peg has always been one of his strengths. And it was good to see him clear twice with his left. I think with Jacob Stockdale gone from 15 at the moment with his injury, or if you will, I don't know how his injury is, but at 15 you had that left option with Jacob there. And I think James Lowe was a good fit at the weekend to substitute that there with those two phenomenal clearance kicks, like the length he got off that boot. And like, that's the stuff we see so often from James Lowe, even in open play, like his boot, whether it's a chip or a grubber through, you know, he's really powerful that way. So look, it's worth having someone on the field like him for that reason. But I thought the try, it was a tough one for him as a winger. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't there. If you shoot and get the ball, and man, you're a hero, and you know, you've saved a try. If you shoot and don't get the ball and it's a try, you're the worst in the world. But equally, if you go soft on your 5 meter line defensively, someone's going to get over the line. So you probably could have read that a little bit better, maybe left it or else just got man and ball. But I think overall, like, he's really coming on, and it's good to see. He's a different type of player to Earlsy. Earlsy has, and Jordan Larmour, they're kind of similar in that they, you know, they dance around players, whereas James Lowe is like that strong ball carrier who kind of has a bit of X factor. You don't really know what you're going to get with him, because he could chip and chase. He could mill someone over twice his size. So he's exciting on attack for sure. And I thought the man of the moment was Hugo Keenan in the back three. He was phenomenal. He just didn't make any mistakes. And as a fullback, you know, you're not looking for that X factor all the time, but he just didn't make mistakes. And safe hands, safe house back there is something that you need. And sometimes you take it for granted just how safe, even like Rob Kearney, how he just did the basics right. And Hugo is really, really filling those shoes well, and just really coming into that position. And I think has the jersey nailed down for the moment anyway.
It's remarkable, the lack of a GAA background in that back three is striking, and surely something you'd use as a black mark against it.
Usually, yeah. Some commentators have to mention their GAA skills for some sort of a catch they make.
It's interesting that you mentioned that about Keenan, that he just does the right things all the time. And I think that was probably one of the things that we maybe didn't appreciate too much with Rob Kearney, that he just did his job all the time, which is a really difficult thing at Test level, to be doing the right thing every single week.
I think that was the one thing that people noticed when Rob went. Like, obviously Hugo has found his feet at the moment, but there was a gap there where we were like swapping around fullbacks, going, who's the best one here? Who should we fit in? Like, was it Larmour? Was it Stockdale? Was it Hugo? And eventually, you know, through like, obviously people have to find their feet in a position like that as well, and get used to playing with the wingers around you, because, you know, depending on the defensive system or depending on the wingers, they might play different, you know, they might play differently. So it's just finding your feet and settling into that, really. But like, even little things that Rob did, if you're watching a game from like behind, or, you know, often when you're watching from TV, you don't see the work off the ball of the fullback. And I would have learned quite a bit about the back three from actually being in live games. And it's the stuff they do off the ball, like showing the 10 the space in behind. But then the minute they've made the decision to kick, you've already cut that space out. And the 10 looks like a fool for kicking the ball straight at the 15. But what the 15 has done was timed their run so that there is that space, so that the space is cut out. And it's the little things like that that we probably didn't acknowledge at the time. And Hugo's really doing a great job at it. Like, he mopped up everything there in the backfield. And just like I said, had really, really safe hands.
Are you jealous watching these games happening at the moment, going, at some point soon, I'd like to be out there?
I think the fact that the schedule was announced last week makes it a little bit easier. Had there been no schedule fixed, or had there been no Six Nations games, you know, in the horizon, I think it would have been a hard to watch it. But like, it's always so exciting watching the Six Nations games, and it even gets us more excited for our own games, knowing that, like, you know, there's a chance and it will actually happen for a change.
Because we've been talking to some of your teammates, I think it was like at the start of last month, and training was like full bore, as if it was going ahead on the normal schedule, and then news came that it had been put back. So what's the schedule like at the moment in terms of training and preparation?
Yeah, so after we got that announcement, we had 2 weeks off. So we were like, oh great, we're back to pre-season number 4. It was just like, poor Orla, our S&C. I feel like she's done so many different schedules this year, depending, obviously, you know, trying to taper us off for games. So she was building us up to Six Nations, and the next thing, cut again. So we had 2 weekends off there, which was actually lovely to have, because we trained the whole way through November, December. So it was nice to do that. But we were back in at the weekend, and like, the change already, knowing that you have games, like, it's great to be training, but knowing that Six Nations is actually coming up now, you know, there's so much more bite at training, and like, there's jerseys up for grabs. So girls are fighting for those jerseys. And again, at the end of the day, there's only 23 jerseys on a match day, and you can see the bite and the fire there already at training. So, oh look, it's we're training this weekend. We were in last weekend, we're in this weekend, and we have a weekend off. And then after that, we're full steam ahead until Six Nations. So it'll be busy, but I'm looking out the window here and there's snow. So I'm nearly happy that it's going to be in April and I don't have to play in some sort of snow.
It's a slightly different type of Six Nations. You don't play everybody. There's two groups. I think we're in with France and Wales. What's the level of expectation ahead of a tournament like that?
Yeah, look, it's a different format this year, obviously, because things are very different this year. And I suppose expecting teams to travel and do the amount of travel that's required within the Six Nations is probably difficult to monitor these days. But yeah, we've got a bye in the first round, and then we play Wales in the first game and then France in the second game. Look, Wales weren't good last year. They'll be disappointed with how they performed. And they're always a tough team, you know, they're always tough to break down. But like, we'd hope to have, you know, we'd be looking to win that group. But I know people often say France are up there, they're semi-pro. They are, but Scotland drew with them last year. Italy beat them the year before in the Six Nations. Like, on any given day, with a good defensive system and a bit of heart, any team can get beaten. We played against France in a training camp there last November, 12 months ago. And I think it made us realise that, like, look, they're not as good as we think they are. Like, they're the same as us. Like, we put it up against them in that training camp, and we actually never got to play them in that Six Nations, and then obviously never got to play them in November. But like, we can't wait to get a crack off them again. And like, everything in our squad has improved. Like, our defensive system has improved. We've gelled together as a squad. We finally have some continuity together as a squad, where we know how each other play. We've been together for the guts of 3 years under Griggsy, 4 years under Griggsy here, and I think everyone's finally, you know, like we said, like I said at the start, you know, everyone backs each other to make decisions. And it's not just our 10 that jumps into first receiver. Like, if everyone knows the plays, backs or forwards, whatever it is, you know, it's finally gelling together. So I think we're just super excited to get out and actually play. And we've done so much training. If we're not trained at this stage, I don't know when we'll ever be trained. But I think everyone is just super excited to get out and play the games. And, like, we're in a good position that, you know, I think we don't have a lot of injuries, which, you know, is the benefit of not having games, because obviously that takes its toll on the body. So we're fresh going in with the full selection, which is really exciting.
Eimear, best of luck with it, and we wish your sister all the best in her recovery too.
Great, thanks very much.
Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Eimear was with us to launch the Aviva Mini Rugby Virtual Skills Hub, which will take place next week's midterm break from Monday the 15th to Friday the 19th of February. Check out aviva.ie/safe-to-dream-team for more. We're back talking football with Daniel Harris ahead of the fifth round of the FA Cup, and David Moyes against Manchester United next.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.